This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. elmad.pardes.org.
Shalom, and welcome to the debut of This Pardes Life, produced by Elmad from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. My name is David Levencross, and I am an instructor at Pardes. I also am the director and founder of something called my Open Book Life Coaching, in which I use Jewish texts and life coaching insights to help people come to personal breakthroughs and to happiness. And the topic of today's show, happiness, is something that I think about a lot. In fact, there's an entire field of psychology called positive psychology, which discusses happiness, what makes people happy. And it's interesting that Rabbi Sherwin Wein, the founder of humanistic Judaism, spoke about happiness as one of the three central secular values, the other two being dignity and survival. And it gives me great, great pleasure to have in our studio today Meir Schweiger to talk about this topic. Meir is a veteran teacher at Pardes. He also was my teacher when I was a Pardes student. And it's really actually very moving and very nice for me today to have the honor and the privilege to interview Meir, which doesn't mean he's going to be able to get off easily. And I still plan to push him with some hard questions. And starting off with a hard question, Meir, another teacher of mine, the late Yeshayahu Leibowitz, was very, very emphatic that Judaism is actually not about happiness, that is for, you know, anthropocentric religions, but that Judaism is theocentric, and that for Judaism, obedience and listening to God rather than happiness is the central value. So I'd like to start off with that question. Is happiness indeed a Jewish value?
Thank you, David. I would actually agree with Professor Leibowitz as seeing obedience as being a central Jewish value. But on the other hand, I think that there is certainly a value to happiness. And I would just begin by quoting something which appears at the end of Deuteronomy in chapter 26, where it talks about the bringing of the first fruits to Jerusalem, to the temple. And this is a halakha that when you come into the land, you settle in the land, then you need to bring the first fruits, the choice fruits, to the temple in Jerusalem, make a proclamation, which we're all familiar with, which says, my father was a wandering Aramean, and is basically a concise recap of the exodus from Egypt or of the enslavement in Egypt. And at the very end, it says that you need to leave the first fruits by the altar. And God says, after you have brought the first fruits, which will be given to the priests, you should rejoice in all the good which God has given you. Which seems to be that it's not only that I bring the first fruits to the temple, but that I am actually mandated to enjoy all the good which God has given me. Now, this is actually not only in chapter 26, this appears in chapter 12 as well, where it speaks about rejoicing in all the good which you have been given. So that what I would say is, perhaps the value of rejoicing in Judaism is first of all grounded in a sense of being appreciative of what we have and seeing whatever we have as being a gift from God, something which needs to be utilized to the greatest extent possible. And in fact, if we look at the various verses where this appears, the way I express my happiness is not only by thanking God, but then sharing with those people who don't have.
So if I understand you correctly, the way that you would define happiness is it's appreciating the good that you have in life, thanking God for it, and bringing other people into it. I sort of know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it to you anyway. And that is, you know, let's speak about enjoyment, pleasure, tanug, if you will, that is disconnected from a strictly religious or moral context. Let's say I just go out and see a movie that I really enjoy and then go out and have dinner afterwards. And I'm not necessarily including somebody. I might go with a friend, but it's not like I'm doing staka to that friend. Would you say that that has Jewish, religious, or any value, this pleasure that one might have, disconnected from any higher or loftier purpose?
In principle, I would say that pleasure should be connected with a higher purpose, but we have a very interesting comment which appears in the Talmud in the context of a Nazirite. There is a rabbi, Rabbi Shimon HaKapar, who said that a Nazirite has to bring a sin offering when he terminates being a Nazirite. And the reason that he brings a sin offering is because he abstained from worldly pleasure. Which seems to be saying that there is a value. If God provided us with a world which has all these things that we can enjoy, that somehow this is a value that we should actually enjoy them and appreciate them. In fact, I'll perhaps go into a different topic which is connected, and that is that when God created Adam and Eve and placed them in the Garden of Eden, this is actually the first time, to go back to Rabbi Leibowitz, Professor Leibowitz, this is the first time that God actually gives them a commandment. What's the commandment? God says, Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel, you should eat from all the fruits in the garden. Now, the continuation of that is, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. Now, generally, people make the assumption that, well, the commandment was to not eat of the tree of knowledge. But in fact, the first part of the statement is, you shall surely eat from all the trees of the garden, which means that God provided us with a garden. God provided us with a variety of fruits. God wants us to eat from the fruits. By doing that, we are actually expressing the will of God. So that, in fact, enjoying life is a value. And that can be said about not only about eating, but as you said, you know, the various pleasures that we have in life. What I would say is, what happens when that's all that there is? What happens when my joy is only reflected in the fact of what I take in? Probably a very good example of that is Haman. When Haman is invited to Esther's party, when Haman is eating and drinking, okay, he is really very, very joyous. He's good of heart. And then all of a sudden he experiences this tremendous down when he encounters Mordechai, and Mordechai won't bow down to him. And I think if you read the whole book of Esther, you'll see that joy is very much connected with self-gratification. And that is actually being presented as an anti-Jewish motif.
You've just mentioned Haman as almost like the anti-happiness person. I'm interested in Tanakh, let's just restrict it to Tanakh. In the Bible, who would you say is the model of a happy person?
Maybe let me, perhaps in answering your question, actually say something else. It's actually fascinating that in the beginning of Bereshit, let me backtrack a moment. In the whole, the five books of Moses, in the Chumash, it never speaks of anybody being happy. In fact, what you'll find is numerous occasions where God says, you should be happy in this or that context, but we never actually have someone described as being happy. What is very interesting is, in the very beginning of Bereshit, after Adam and Eve eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the curse is that they will be sad. And in fact, we also don't have a description of anybody being sad except for God. At the very end of Parshat Bereshit, when the world has really degenerated, and it seems as if there is no shining light, although there is one shining light, which is Noah, it says that God regrets that he created the world, and God is saddened to his heart. So if I actually see being sad as being the inverse of being happy, it seems that much of the discussion in the Torah is much more about people being sad than being happy. Now, if I had to pick one figure that I can think of might be Avraham. Okay, in chapter 24 of Bereishit, it says that God blessed Abraham with everything. It says that later on in the chapter, when he dies and he's gathered unto his people, he dies in a ripe old age. He is somebody who's filled, who's satisfied. So that there may be something about happiness and being somehow satisfied / fulfilled, having a sense of completion. And what I would bring up in terms of, since we've been discussing the question of a Jewish value, is to what extent is it that I am satisfied, completed, and perhaps very caught up with myself, which I see as being perhaps a formula for then having a tremendous downfall and eventually becoming very frustrated and sad? Or to what extent is it that I'm able to take that sense of fulfillment by somehow giving to others, which could mean giving to God, which could mean giving to the people around me? In fact, in that section which I mentioned to you about Abraham, it's actually very interesting that the two topics which are discussed in that parsha, Parshat Chaye Sarah, is Avraham burying his wife, and Avraham then finding a wife for Yitzchak. And what you see over there is that somehow Avraham is always involved in that process of giving, and perhaps it's that giving which gives him that sense of happiness.
It's interesting that I have a clause on Chaye Sarah where it's just called Four Funerals and a Wedding, which is riffing of the popular movie Four Weddings and a Funeral. And I've never really thought about it, but both of those, the popular movie and Chaye Sarah, are really dealing with the issue of what does it mean to be happy? What does it take to have happiness? So I just think there was a very interesting insight.
I just want to add another thing in terms of this idea. In the book of Deuteronomy, it's really very interesting that when I said, you know, God is telling us to be happy. This comes up in chapter 16 in Deuteronomy when it discusses the festivals. It speaks about rejoicing during the festivals, and especially in the context of Shavuot, Sukkot. Fascinating that somehow rejoicing is connected with a number of elements. I just want to mention three. One is the idea of being blessed, of having bounty. The idea that somehow in order to be happy, that you really need to have something, and perhaps when people really are affluent, that should be a somehow base for happiness. But then beyond that, it talks about being happy before God. The idea being that your happiness is expressed by being in relationship, first with God, and then subsequently it talks about be happy, you and the stranger and the widow and the orphan. The idea being by somehow bringing people into my enjoyment of what I have, that actually is what creates real happiness. In fact, Maimonides, in terms of the question you brought up before, when he discusses the laws of celebrating, being happy on the festivals, he says that anybody who actually has a very sumptuous meal and has it just for the members of their household, but doesn't invite the widow and the poor, that is the happiness of their stomach, but that is not the happiness of God.
A lot of your comments, especially the one about Avram being having a sense of satisfaction, having a sense of all that is in place, that everything is in place, does lead me to a question, which is, you have like certain, if I may call it, you know, middle class checklist that you need to have, to be married, to have children, to have a job, to have a home, to have a career, to have a sense of direction, to have a certain amount of respect in the community, to have a place of worship that one might enjoy or a communal life of some kind. And it interests me from your viewpoint or from your understanding of the Torah's viewpoint, whether in fact to be happy it's required to have these check boxes. Is it possible to be truly happy without at least some of these check boxes being filled?
I would definitely say that it's possible to be happy without the check boxes being filled, and I would add the following, which is not exactly what you said, but I will eventually get to it, David. I think that one of the things that we see as a recurring theme throughout the Torah are people who are unhappy. And I think the unhappiness always stems from the fact of always looking at what I don't have rather than what I do have. And if I go back to the example I gave earlier in the Garden of Eden, God tells them, Adam and Eve, eat of all the trees in the garden. Surely eat of all the trees. One tree they can't eat. And it seems that it's that one tree which all of a sudden becomes desirable. It's that one tree which I must have. And it's as if I don't have that tree, then everything else I have is worthless. There's actually a very interesting statement to that effect. When the Jews are in the desert, in chapter 11 in the book of Numbers, the Jews start complaining about the fact that they want meat and they don't have any meat. And at one point they say the following phrase, Va'ata nafshenu yevesha ein kol. Our souls are parched. We have, and the word kol here can be translated two ways. Everything, or it can be translated as nothing. When you say ain kol, does that mean there is not everything, or is that saying there is nothing? And in fact, that reflects an attitude. If I don't have everything, I have nothing. And I think that becomes really the problem of the human reality of how much it is that we find it difficult to appreciate what we have. For many years, we used to have a Holocaust survivor who would speak to our students. And at one point she said, sometimes I meet people who say to me, I have nothing. And if I think it's worth the time of day, and there's somebody who might actually listen, I tell them my story of how I was 12 years old. I was taken to Auschwitz. As soon as I got there, I was separated from my parents. I was stripped of my suitcases, of my possessions. I was stripped of my clothing. I was stripped of my pictures, my family memories. And then eventually my hair was shaved off. That's having nothing. But after that experience, I always say to myself, the minute I have something, that might be everything. And perhaps that's an orientation which I think we, coming from a Western society, have to really learn to somehow incorporate. How we can be happy with what we have. How we can be appreciative of what we have. The Torah in Deuteronomy tells us, you will eat and you will be satisfied. Bless God. Thank God. Acknowledge God. And the question becomes, anytime we go out to a restaurant, how much do we complain about what we don't have? As opposed to, isn't this wonderful that we have that opportunity? And I think that that's a question of an orientation that people need to have, of being able to focus on what, as we say, the full half of the glass as opposed to the empty part of the glass.
Mayor, earlier you spoke about God being sad, saying, I should not have created this world, and God being distressed. Is God happy? Can God be happy?
I think it actually is a Jewish idea that somehow what we do actually does impact on God. Right? Again, if you take a certain analogy between parents and children, I think that, you know, how children behave very much impacts on their parents. And somehow when parents see their children, okay, doing what they feel is the right thing to do, that becomes a tremendous source of joy and happiness. And obviously the reverse is that that becomes a source of sadness. Yes, I think that, in other words, God actually can be happy. In fact, there's a fascinating story in the Talmud of an argument between different rabbis, and where at one point there's Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Eliezer, and one of the rabbis wants to make the point that ultimately, right, a decision in Jewish law is based on the majority. And in the end, even though there seem to be all kinds of indicators from God, miraculous things which are going on, that it should really go the other way, but nevertheless, the rabbis decide, but we have to go by the majority opinion. Why? Because they say that there's a verse in Deuteronomy which says the Torah is not in heaven, that ultimately the Torah is something which is to be determined by the people. In the follow-up, the story says that Elijah comes and says, what is God doing in heaven? God is actually smiling that my children have actually defeated me, because my children are using the very instruments which I gave them to actually decide what should be done. So yes, I think you have certain stories in the Talmud which seem to indicate that God does have a sense of humor, that God actually is very happy. And the question is, to what extent is it that we are happy? Again, if I take the parent-student analogy, parent-child analogy, parents are generally happy when their children are happy. How much are we happy? How much do we think about how our happiness is very much can impact on God's happiness?
I'm hearing a lot of very, very powerful things from you. I hear that happiness is very, very connected to being thankful. I hear that very, very often if we put our happiness in material things or how much I have, nothing is really going to satisfy, and we're always going to need more and more. And once one need is satisfied, it just brings up yet another need. I hear about how it's important to bring other people into one's happiness. I'm interested, though, this is, you know, the life coaching hat rather than the Paradise teacher hat putting on at the moment. I'm interested, though, for people listening in, or for me, if somebody were to say to you, Mayor, can you give me a few practical things that I can do to increase my happiness? Things that I can actually go out and do. What would be the practical things that you might suggest to somebody?
On a practical level, I would say that, first of all, when people are eating, it would actually be a very good thing to always say thank you. It might be a very good thing to express your thanks to God as well. It would always be good when you're eating something to perhaps think about those people who don't have anything to eat, to be able to always put in perspective. I say to myself all the time that when there are certain things that get me a little bit down, and then all of a sudden I think about other people and other situations, all of a sudden I begin to realize, as this Holocaust survivor, how much it is that I really have, and that actually can be a very big boost. One thing which you mentioned kind of in passing, David, and I'd like to maybe focus a little bit on that. When God creates Adam and Eve, and in particular Eve, before God does it, he says, Lo tov heyot Adam levado. Not good for man to be alone. Okay? And there, in fact, is a rabbinic comment that says that one who is not married does not experience happiness. So without getting into the question of marriage for the moment, but I would say on a much larger scale, I think it's very hard for people to be happy being alone. I think people really need to be with other people. And that's something also which can be a way of cultivating happiness, to be able to find other people to be with. In an ideal, to be able to have a spouse, to be able to have a soulmate. But even if you're not having a spouse or a soulmate, just being in the company of other people, being able to share with other people. I would even say that even if it doesn't mean giving, right, food or giving money or whatever it is to other people, just being able to talk to other people, to share your thoughts with other people, to be able to get the other side, to hear other people's stories, that can actually be something which helps to bring about happiness.
So I hear you saying two very, very powerful practical things. One is that food, eating can be a moment of thinking of others, of thanking God, of thanking whoever made the food, of thanking the universe, if you will. And in addition, that relationships with people, whether it be with a spouse, whether it be with friends, whether it be with something one is learning with or studying with, that these are all very, very powerful things that can bring people happiness. We're finishing very soon, but if I may be bold enough to ask you a more personal question, when you look at your life, Mayor, and I've had the pleasure of working with you and learning from you, when you look at the life, could you maybe share with our listeners, many of us who really know you and who love you, could you share with us some of the moments in your own life that you can think of where you have profoundly felt a moment of happiness?
It actually should not be so unusual, but I'll actually tell you a story that there were a few times when days where I had very, very hard days. And then I went to a wedding, and it wasn't even somebody that I was necessarily close to. And then all of a sudden, coming to the wedding and seeing the bride and groom, seeing the people who were dancing, and not only that, but seeing how much the people who were dancing wanted to make the bride and groom happy. Becoming part of that environment took me out of my sadness, so to speak, and made me happy. And I think I'm not unusual in that respect. And I think that it's this whole idea of really, as I said before, of being part of a group, and especially when you have a group which is celebrating, and to be able to somehow go outside of yourself, I think that that is something which is very powerful. I also find that some of my most profound moments of happiness are when I pray. When I actually feel that I am really here talking to God, I feel that I'm getting a listening ear where I'm able to actually pour out the things in my that are on my heart, and where in the end I feel uplifted after that experience. I actually find that when there are people who are in need, and I am able to now provide something which they need, when I can actually see the smile on their face, that actually becomes a tremendous source of happiness. And of course, you know, that is certainly true when I can, you know, speak about my children, speak about my spouse. Okay, the idea of being able to somehow make them happy, which is what really makes me happy, those are the things that that I've been speaking about. And I want to just add, I spoke earlier about Haman, you know, and that there are certainly moments when people can be happy when they are, for want of a better term, self-indulgent. But I think the question is perhaps sustained happiness and being able to maintain it over a period of time. And I think the points which I was bringing up, whether it be with a relationship with God, whether it be with other people, whether it be simply being able to look at what you have and being content with it, that's something which takes a lot of discipline, but at the same time is in the long term what can be very, very rewarding. And again, I would say is a value which the Torah sees, because God wants us to be happy. And to go back to what you said earlier, David, the more that we're happy, the more God is happy.
Thank you, Meir. And it's perhaps very, very appropriate that Meir and I, and also Louise, who is the producer of the show, are just about to go upstairs to celebrate the Sheva Brachot, one of the special meals that we have after a wedding of one of our students who got married a few days ago. And I think it just worked out like that. But I think it's really, really beautiful that we're going from a discussion of happiness to going to do the mitzvah of Mesameach Chatan V'Kala, of making the bride and the groom happy. Thank you very, very much, Meir, for joining us. And thank you from me and for many of our listeners who you have helped make happy in the past years. And may you continue to do so for many, many years. Thank you very, very much. I've been interviewing Rabbi Meir Schweiger. This is David Levenkrus signing off from Jerusalem.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. elmad.pardes.org.